Looking at retirement financial advice now here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, my guest today, Frank Armstrong of Coconut Grove, Florida. Frank's the founder of the investment advisor firm Investor Solutions, Inc., co-author with Jason Doss of The Retirement Challenge, Will You Sink or Swim? It's a complete do-it-yourself toolkit to navigate your financial picture. That's the subtitle, published by FT Press. The book will be in stores about February 15th. The website is up, and you can take a look at it today at sink-swim.com, sink-swim.com. If you want to take a look at the book as we visit with Frank, and certainly if you have some questions about retirement and financial, your financial situation, I hope you'll join us. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. You can email us as well, and the email address is talk@wpr.org. Frank Armstrong with us again by phone. Frank, hi. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thanks, Larry. Always a pleasure.
Really, really pleased to have you with us. Well, we just heard on the news that, you know, we're losing hundreds of thousands of jobs. New York and California are going to be hit pretty hard. Miami and Chicago are a couple others mentioned. The housing market been kind of in the tank. And I think that virtually every asset class available to us as investors is under pressure. Where do we go from here?
Well, it's ugly out there. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, I'm an optimist long term. It took us a while to get into this hole. It's going to take us a while to dig ourselves out. But, you know, we don't have any alternative but to stick with equity or stock investing because the rates of return, especially today for people who are willing to invest, they may not like what's happened to their portfolio in the last year. But looking today forward, they'll probably like it a lot for the next 5 or 10 years. And, of course, nobody knows when the stock market will recover. But invariably it will. It always has. And I put in my faith in the growth, the long-term growth of the world economy. And if you want to profit from that, the way to do it is to buy stocks around the world.
And you've said we're living in, you have said in the past, we're living in an era of cradle-to-grave insecurity. What actually do you mean by that?
Well, in the old days, you showed up for work reasonably sober and reasonably often for 30 years. You graduated with a pension, a gold watch, and that pension was guaranteed for life. Social Security was a large part of your income. You had family support, and the social safety net was there for you. Today, most of that's been reversed. If you don't do your own retirement planning, nobody's going to do it for you. The 401k and other types of participant-funded, participant-directed pension plans have overtaken that because corporations don't want the liability. And so all of that responsibility has been shifted to the worker, and the worker has not exhibited any great desire to have that responsibility or any great ability to do it. And so they've got to reorient their thinking and take responsibility for it, because if they don't, no one's going to do it for them.
Yeah. Before we go to the phones here, you've got this new book that's coming out mid-February. Tell us about what's in your book, The Retirement Challenge.
Well, that book is a everything you wanted to know about retirement from soup to nuts almost. It talks about the differences between defined benefit plans, defined contribution plans. That's the traditional pension plan we just discussed versus the 401k. It talks about what to do if your employer fails or the plan fails. It talks about how much you need to retire and the benefits of starting early. Everything that I could put in the book that would help people make better decisions and prepare for retirement, and so they have a chance to live a life of dignity after they quit working.
Yeah, great. Well, Jill in Milwaukee will turn to you for a question or comment. Jill, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you very much. I'm a recent, 11 years ago, I graduated from Milwaukee School of Engineering with a electrical engineering tech and a technical communications minor, and for the last 11 years I've worked for two different companies as a technical writer, and discovered recently that I have an attention deficit disorder, which explains an awful lot of stuff in my life, but doesn't give me the organization skills that my previous employer wanted, so I've lost my job. And I'm turning 60, and I'm looking at the possibility of not being able to get a conventional job. But I had not planned to retire. I'm still paying off the credit cards, debt, and college loans. I was a single mother with a 24-and-a-half-year-old son, and I'm just trying to figure out what I should be doing. I've got a small 401k from the first place, but the second place where I worked for 8.5 years, I didn't do the 401k so that I would be able to pay off the credit cards, which of course did not happen. Mm-hmm. So I'm just trying to figure out what to do. I'm technically disabled, but I know I've got skills and I've got abilities that should be useful somewhere. Maybe not in the larger companies, but I should be able to be doing something with my life that's constructive and that's helpful.
All right.
Well, I'm sure you can, and ADD is not the end of the world. It is a challenge, but life is full of challenges. To speak directly to your dilemma, though, first thing you got to do is pay off the credit card debt. It's so ugly, it's unbelievable. It's what we would call a toxic product. And there's no way that you can save faster than the credit card will suck you dry. So that's job number one. In the new book, we talk about 70 is the new 65, because many people are not ready for retirement. And if they simply delay their retirement by 5 years, it gives them 5 more years, or in your case, 10 more years, to accumulate, to pay down those credit card debts. You'll then have a shorter life expectancy. Your Social Security goes up magically by 8% a year between 65 and 70, and then it stops. Any other savings that you have can accumulate and will hopefully grow over that period of time. So there's nothing magic about 60 or 65 as a retirement age. That's left over from years and years ago. When hardly anybody lived to 60, so it was easy for employers or governments to say, listen, live to 65 and we'll pay you for life, because they knew they didn't have to do that very often.
Well, good luck to you and Jill in your job search, and whatever you can do to get those credit card bills paid off, that's your first choice, because I guess, Frank, in terms of investing, you're better off to probably pay that off before you start investing.
Well, you got to. In my wildest, most optimistic forecast, I would say the stock market will deliver somewhere between 9-11% over the next, say, 30 years. But your credit card is sucking you dry for 30-35%, depending on your credit history and your individual card. And so, attempting to save before you do the credit card, it's just you're going backwards faster than you're going forward.
Yeah. Jill, so good luck.
That's mission number one for everybody, is get rid of consumer debt.
Aaron in Harvard, Illinois, we turn to you now. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you. I don't even know where to begin. I administrate pensions for a living for Fortune 500 companies, and I'm looking at the baby boomers right now. And you look at the amount of loss that people are seeing in their 401k. Most people don't have a pension anymore. We're seeing more and more people are freezing off their plans. They're not going to be offering them to the future places, to the future employees. And I guess the question I have is, given the fact that you have fluctuations in the stock market, how are people my age, I'm 35, ever supposed to retire on a cash-based system? And I'll take my question offline.
All right.
Well, you know that the value of pension plans varies greatly from employer to employee, from employer to employer, because some of them are high cost with ineffective choices, et cetera. But you have 30 years to go, and it would be rather nominal amounts of savings should prepare you for retirement. The stock market has gone up and down. But with all that time to go, I would think the most, the highest probability of success for you would be to heavily weight yourself in equities and just grin and bear the ups and downs, because it goes up many more times than it goes down, and cumulatively it goes up a whole lot more than it goes down. And it's been that way for a couple hundred years since we had stock markets. So you want to take advantage of that to get the real growth that you need. In fact, from another perspective, there's no real alternative. There's only a couple numbers you need to know about financial economics. The zero rate return is typically about 3%. And lo and behold, the inflation rate is typically about 3%. But stock markets have returned in the neighborhood of 9 to 11%, and that's a lot of real growth. And that's the reason that we put up with the aggravation of the fluctuations. But people who have gotten bruised in the last 12 months and stop investing in stocks or stop making contributions to their 401k are going to have a very bad outcome. They need to continue to save. And they need to continue to invest the appropriate amount in the world's equity markets. But as you get closer to retirement, you need to scale back. And we have a description in the book of what we call the glide slope approach, so that at 30 years you could be heavily invested in equities. At 5 years or so prior to retirement, you should be set up so that you can have sustained withdrawals for the rest of your life. And probably you should have somewhere between 40 and 60% of your account in equities then, and the rest in a very reliable fixed income. But it's a long-term planning process, and to some degree, especially after the last 12 months, it's a test of faith. But, you know, we all do tests of faith every day, and what's always worked before is more than likely going to work for you.
Yeah. Thanks for calling, Aaron. I appreciate your call. Raleigh in Oak Creek, it's your turn now. Hi, Raleigh.
Oh, good morning, Larry. I'd like to ask your guest about the Roth 401k. I've heard on another public radio program that this is a good time to open a Roth IRA, and I'm wondering what his thoughts are on the subject.
Roth IRAs.
Sure. Well, Roth 401ks are like Roth IRAs. You don't get a tax deduction now, but when you get distributions after 5 years and 59 and a half, all your distributions are tax-free forever, and you don't have to deal with the problem of required minimum distributions at age 70 and a half. The big advantage for Roth IRAs, though, is if you're early in your career and your tax bracket is low anyway, then you're not giving up much in the way of a deduction. And if your tax bracket is going to be higher after retirement than it is today, you've been able to leverage the tax system a little bit to your advantage. If, however, you were substantially lower after you retire, then the traditional IRA works out better for you, or the traditional Roth. But most people don't believe that tax rates will stay low throughout their whole retirement. Looking at the enormous amounts of federal deficits that are not only current but projected, it's hard to imagine low tax rates being sustained forever. And so the Roth IRA and the Roth 401k will be particularly attractive if that's what you believe.
Yeah.
But I think it's a great way to save. And it's also for people whose primary interest is to pass on assets to their beneficiaries. It allows them to prepay the income taxes on that stream of income for the rest of their lives, which is pretty nifty.
Yeah, absolutely. Raleigh, thank you very much for calling. Our guest today, Frank Armstrong of Coconut Grove, Florida, founder of the investment advisor firm Investor Solutions, Inc., and co-author with Jason Doss of the new book titled The Retirement Challenge, Will You Sink or Swim? A Complete Do-It-Yourself Toolkit to Navigate Your Financial Future, published by FT Press. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a question for Frank Armstrong or a comment, I hope you'll join in as we talk about retirement and financial. Frank's giving us some financial advice here for retirement. Give us a call. The number to call is 1 642-1234, or you can email us, and the email address is talk@wpr.org. And, Frank, we're going to turn to Green Bay and talk with Gus next. Gus, hello. Thank you for calling.
Larry, thank you very much. Just a quickie here. I'm 86 years old, a retiree, state employee, with a defined benefit type retirement annuity, Social Security, IRAs in the background, relatively safe. But my concern is a socially responsible balanced fund that I have in the market, investing in, of course, stocks, bonds, real estate, and so on. I've lost a bundle of money there. And with my timeline rather limited, I'm wondering whether I should leave it in there, pull it out, put it in CDs, Treasury, some credit you're aware of, it's safe. You got any thoughts on that?
Well, you know, if your retirement or if your investment accounts are down today, then join the rest of the world. If they're down substantially worse or you have reason to believe that it's an inappropriate mix for you, then you might want to be looking reallocating to something that's more appropriate. But I wouldn't necessarily be rushing out to sell my equity accounts today or to get out of equities because you're going to lock in whatever losses you've experienced and preclude the opportunity to rebound when the stock market does, in fact, rebound. I'm not a big proponent of socially responsible investing, not because I'm not sympathetic to it, but because I don't know how I could execute it rationally and inexpensively and effectively. It gets very difficult when you start wrestling with the details about which stocks to exclude, et cetera. So I take the position that the stock market is morally neutral and that the growth of the world economy is a good thing. And I let the stock market sort out the various values. And I understand and I appreciate that other people have different perspectives, but as an investment advisor, my goal is to try and get people the highest return per unit of risk that they're able to generate, and I don't believe I can do that effectively with a socially responsible policy today. Maybe more and better products will come down the road that allow us to do that, but today perhaps we could access 20% of the world's economy with socially responsible investing policies. And I don't know anybody who wants to be 20% socially responsible. And I don't think you should leave out the other 80% of the world.
Yeah.
So it's a moral dilemma for me, and I understand the dilemma for my clients or for people who'd like to pursue that.
Yeah.
But in any event, back to your question about whether you should be selling these investments that are beat up today. If you don't need the money in the next few years to live on, and it sounds like you have other assets, I would hang tight. And I know that takes a lot of patience and a lot of courage.
That's what I've been doing so far. I do have other investments, and I don't really need the money, but I hate to lose it.
Well, you know, you lose it, you lock it in for sure, loss, if you sell now. And you have every expectation of an increase in value if you hang tight. You know, the world's not going to end. This is really a bad environment out there. But, you know, the world is going to go on. We've had these kind of blows before, and we've recovered. And I just don't believe everybody's going to roll over and say, oh, the stock market's down, let's quit.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Good luck, Gus. Thank you for calling. Federico in Rochelle, Illinois, will turn to you now. Hi, thank you for calling.
How are you?
Great, thanks.
I have two questions. The first one is I've changed careers 2 or 3 times. I was a union painter for 4 years, so I wasn't there long enough to get vested. And now I'm a truck driver. And I've never saved or invested for retirement. I'm 36 years old. What would you get started?
How do you get started is what your question is. Okay.
Exactly.
All right.
Well people who've never started before and are changing positions often ought to be looking at IRAs. The IRAs don't get enough respect. But if you put away $5,000 a year in an IRA, and if you're married, your spouse could do the same thing, That's a lot of money accumulating over the rest of your life towards retirement. And if everybody did that, I mean, you're looking at over 30 years, probably $1 million plus accumulation, even at very modest rates of return, because you have the miracle of compounding over all that time. And that would go a long way towards solving everybody's retirement problems. And, of course, if you do get to work for a company that has a match program and a 401k, that's just so much more gravy. But the message of my book, I think, is applies to you and many other readers. That if you don't do this yourself, if you wait for some company to do it for you, it's just not going to happen. And so you need to start thinking about alternatives to the traditional corporate retirement plan, and that might be IRAs and Roth IRAs, or it might be just a very tax-efficient corporate brokerage plan using index funds, say, around the world at some place like Schwab or TD Ameritrade or Fidelity. Keep the costs low, keep your tax exposure low, and diversify as widely as possible to keep the risk low.
Right. I have a second question, if I may.
Sure.
I have some credit cards that I just haven't been able to pay down. And how healthy is it to get those companies that negotiate for you a lower rate and lock you into, like, a payment?
There's a lot of con artists in that business. And I really can't there's none that I can recommend that I've had any experience with. But anecdotally, we've heard some real horror stories from people who have been taken advantage of by credit repair services, et cetera. So I'm not in a position to give you what I'd call good professional advice on that subject, but I will tell you, do whatever you can to get rid of credit card debt. And then if you can't pay it off at the end of every month, cut it into tiny little pieces.
Yeah. And good luck, and thank you very much for calling, Federico. Appreciate your call. Ann in McHenry, Illinois, we're on to you now. Hi, Ann.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question in regards to college funding. I have a daughter who's a freshman in college this year and a son who is a year and a half away. Several years ago, we put about $10,000 into a mutual fund for each of them, hoping to use that for their education funds. Well, now that fund went up, but now it's back down to about our original $10,000 investment. Could you perhaps give some general advice to me and maybe others as to whether we should hold on to this fund and let it grow some more over the next couple of years and bite the bullet and get the fund someplace else, or should we go ahead and cash that in and use that for our education funds? What's some general advice and guidance on that?
Well, you know, it's hard to give general advice because your specific situation is not general. Mm-hmm. But if you could afford to get funding from some other source, then you can hope that the stock market will recover in the next couple of years and you'll have a pretty good bounce in that. But, you know, there's no guarantee that the market will recover. I would say the highest probability in the next 5 years is that you'll have good and satisfactory growth. But on the other hand, if you have to borrow the money, then that's a drag on your other earnings. So I certainly wouldn't want to finance it with credit cards, for instance.
No, not at all.
No.
But, you know, there are student loans out there. There's scholarships. There's other ways to finance education. It's unfortunate that your timing is such that the fund is down now.
Right.
Many of the college funds would have moved you to relatively safe investments as your timeline towards spending that money shrinks. But, it's unfortunately, this is a global phenomenon. There's been no way to hide against what's happened in the world's equity markets. And I think it's going to be temporary, although I wouldn't want to tell you that there's any particular probability to a recovery in the next 2 or 3 years.
Well, thank you.
All right, thanks.
That was a non-answer. Thank you for calling in, but I wish I had a crystal ball to help you out.
Oh, thanks, Ann, for calling. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Jim and Minocqua up next. Hi, Jim.
Well, hi, Larry. Good to talk to you today.
Thank you for calling.
I just wanted to call, reiterate the value investing in the index funds. I'm a 35-year private investor. Been self-employed for 27 of those years. And I have come to the conclusion that less than 20% of the active fund managers will beat an index fund after you take into consideration the tax savings and also the low cost. And I also want to just confirm that you can buy index funds that will allocate your assets to whatever category that is most comfortable for you. So I heard while I was hanging on the phone here, I heard that you talked about index funds, but I wanted to call and reconfirm that that's absolutely worked best for me.
Well, listen, that's just proof positive that great minds think in the same direction, and for every reason that you gave. And yes, you can build a global asset allocation plan using exclusively index funds, and I believe that's the low cost, low risk, and low tax exposure solution for just about everybody.
Yeah. The other point I wanted to make, I had two girls that went to college. One went on to law school. We started funding college education funds through gifts to our daughters when they were actually very little. And when it came time for them to go to universities, we had both undergraduate educations funded. Nowadays, you have the 529 funds, which I recommend anybody that's considering that have children that are going to ultimately go to higher education to contribute to those.
Well, that's good advice for anybody. Maybe you should be on the show. I agree 100% with what you said. There's also the Coverdell IRA, which is also a great thing. And as opposed to the 529, it allows you, if you care to make the investment decisions and control your costs a little better. But either one of them are great things. Advanced funding is always better than waiting until the event happens and looking at the enormous cost that you don't know where the money's going to come from.
Jim, thank you.
You're welcome.
Appreciate that. And we had an email from Laura, who in De Pere, who wonders about whether or not you would suggest investing more money right now due to the fact that everything can be bought at a smaller dollar amount. I was looking into buying some stocks now that the price has gone down so much. I do have faith that the market's going to come back and believe that I could really make a gain on my dollar. I'm 31, and I do have a 401k, but I'm thinking about purchasing some separate stocks as well. What do you think about this idea?
I think that, you know, if you have the stomach for it, and you really should at that age, this may be the buying opportunity of the millennium. But going back to our comments about the index funds, I wouldn't want to be picking individual stocks. I would want the widest diversified portfolio I could have that's the lowest cost and that has the lowest turnover inside, so that I don't have the expense, the risk, and the tax drag.
Absolutely, and some of those funds would be what companies, Frank?
Well, my favorite company is Vanguard. You know, if anybody on Wall Street deserves a white hat, it's those guys. Fidelity has some great index funds that they market as the perfect tens, where the operating expenses is only 0.1%. It's 10 basis points, and that's pretty inexpensive. They may have higher minimums to get into, but for retail investors, you have the opportunity to buy the vast majority of the stocks available in the world through index funds at Vanguard, and that would also include real estate. And I think that's where I would be if I were a retail investor.
Andy in Milwaukee.
Incidentally, I should say I have no financial arrangement with Vanguard. We do use it for our clients, but they don't pay me to say this, and I have no stake in it.
Andy in Milwaukee, we turn to you now. Hi, Andy.
Hey, how are we doing today?
Good, thank you.
Good. Hey, my question is, I am 23. I'm in my first year of working, and I'm starting to save for retirement and everything like that. A couple of my friends who went to school for financial analysts, they gave me the the kind of general strategy to invest in the 401k up to the point where your employer matches, and then to pump up the Roth IRA up as high as possible after that. I was just kind of wondering if you have any general investment strategies for somebody who's just getting started now.
No, I think your friend gave you good advice. You always want to get the match unless it's a really horrible, horrible 401k. After that, the Roth IRA is a great way to accumulate for retirement down the road. And also, if you have an emergency, the principal's available tax-free to you. So Roth IRA, your friend gave you great advice, and I really find nothing to quibble with it about it, and I think you ought to thank your friend and follow it.
I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Andy, for calling. And Mary in Richland Center, we're on to you now. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
I have a couple of questions. Wondering if you can tell me or some general advice as to how stable individual states' pension plans are. I've worked for the state of Illinois, and I am disabled, retired. I'm 67, and I receive a pension through the state, and I also receive Social Security. I don't know how stable the state pension is or how long it's going to last.
I really couldn't comment on an individual state. I know that with the stock market down, some of the pension funds have also suffered, as you would expect. Many of them are underfunded, or they don't even know what their funding liability is. You may see down the road that your grandkids hate you a lot because they've got to support you with enormous tax increases. Of all the things you have to worry about today, the chance of your state reducing your income at this point is probably pretty small. I'm sure you could go online to Google or someplace and look for the funding of your individual state and get it. But I can't give you even a ballpark idea of what that might be.
Okay. Now, what about investing U.S. E-bonds and, savings bonds?
Mm-hmm. Well, those bonds are priced today at extraordinarily low yields. If you're talking treasuries, they're extraordinarily low. And the prices of regular savings bonds are very low. It might be a good place to stash a little money, but you're not going to ever get any long-term growth out of it. And you might as well just go and buy money market funds or short-term bond funds. It's not a magic panacea, but they are safe. The U.S. government will pay you back, but they're not going to pay you back with any growth that exceeds the inflation rate.
All right. Thank you, Mary, for calling. Mike in Milwaukee, on to you now. Hi, Mike.
Hi. I got a ton of money in the Treasury bills. And I bought that stuff in the last 3 years because I didn't want to be looking over my shoulder all the time to see what's going on. And it just so happens that I sold whatever stock I had like 3 days before the September crash. So I've been pretty lucky. But the problem is this. If the economy – well, let me ask you direct. Do you think the economy will change into an inflationary economy, thereby really battering people like me?
If it does, it will batter people like you. Right now their problem is deflation. They have enormous deflation in commodity prices and of course home prices and other goods are going on sale, and people won't buy. Capitalism doesn't work very well, where people think, gee, I don't want to buy anything because tomorrow it's going to be cheaper. So they're going to do everything they can to prevent deflation from happening. And that may just simply mean flooding the world's markets with currency, which they can do just by printing it. And they don't even have to print it these days. They got electronic versions of it they can flood the world with.
So that certainly is something that you can look for them to do to stabilize that. Now, if they go overboard and we get an inflationary environment, then you won't be very happy with your real return on Treasury bills. And this time, your timing was very fortunate. You know, you're a very lucky or astute guy. But if one thing that I, in the back of my mind, and you won't hear this from any politician, one way to solve a lot of our current economic problems is to inflate the currency. And if you think about it, if the price of your house magically doubles and you happen to be underwater, then the people who wrote the mortgage are okay, and you're okay. You're not underwater anymore, and it is one way to solve some of these housing problem areas and debt problems that we have with trillions of dollars worth of this stuff being underwater. I don't know that they'll do that, but it would be tempting if I were sitting in that seat to consider that.
Hmm.
But you know, I don't like to make predictions. Who knows? There's political considerations involved, economic considerations, and when they get up in the morning and decide to start messing around with currency and inflation rates, they actually don't have as much control over that as they like to think, and you may perhaps think. So we get off into Never Never Land with my opinion, and my opinion isn't worth any more than your opinion. You know, we'll all meet for drinks 20 years from now and see how it turned out.
How about if I own real estate to balance out the Treasury bills?
Well, the real estate, you know, is depending on what kind of real estate. Most of it's in deep distress,
yeah.
And it's going to take. There's so much oversupply of residential real estate and maybe even commercial real estate that it's going to take a long, long time for it to dig itself out. And if you've got the time, then maybe you can get some astute deals today. On the other hand, just like everything else, next year you may be sorry you didn't wait, because the oversupply here in Miami is just frightening, and other markets around the country are the same.
So if you have money and you're a first-time home buyer, you're in a pretty good situation.
But you might be in a better situation next year, and that's the problem that we have, is that's why people don't want to buy, they're looking at the market going down, 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 and nobody out there is sticking their neck out and saying, whoops, today we hit the bottom. Today's the day to buy. That's just not happening.
No.
So all our strategy is based on guessing. I mean, you might as well be going to Pottawatomie and shooting craps or something.
Well, and it is. And so, we think a diversified equity strategy makes sense, which would include real estate. But I wouldn't want to bet on any particular asset class recovering before all the rest. And we know that real estate is particularly depressed, and it's caused that depression in real estate prices has triggered a lot of the bad things that have happened in the last 12 months.
Yeah. Yep. Thank you very much for calling, Mike. Appreciate it. Frank Armstrong, our guest today, founder of the investment advisor firm Investor Solutions and co-author with Jason Doss of the book The Retirement Challenge, Will You Sink or Swim? A complete do-it-yourself toolkit to navigate your financial picture. It's published by FT Press. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Frank Armstrong will be with us right up until noon today, and then we'll be joining the Wisconsin celebration from the state capitol of the life of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. But for now, let's go to Tom in Hawkins, who has a question or comment. Hi, Tom.
Hello, Larry. Hello, Frank.
Hey, Tom.
I have a question regarding the Roth IRA and or potentially other investments. I am disabled and collecting Social Security. Talk to my bank about opening a Roth, and they say, well, you got to have a paycheck, a W-2 in order to do a Roth. Social Security doesn't count. So this year I'm able to draw out of my pension as well as my Social Security. Will that pension enable me to go to a Roth IRA?
Or, no.
And if not, what else could you suggest?
Well, the answer is your pension won't. You can't use pension to fund a Roth. And what else I would suggest is to go to, say, Vanguard or Fidelity and buy their low-cost index funds in a mix that's appropriate for you between stocks and bonds, as widely diversified as you can. That's, again, I mean, I've said it before in this program, that's the low-cost, low-risk and low-tax drag way to invest in the world's markets. Your choice is to, your problem is to decide how much you should put in stocks and how much you should put in safe assets. But that's the investment strategy that I think gives you the highest probability of success once you've solved that critical question of the split between stocks and bonds.
All right. Thanks for calling, Tom. And Dave in Tomahawk, we're on to you now. Hi, Dave.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, in past years, my wife and I were able to contribute to a Roth because we didn't make as much money, and now we're over that limit and have been for a while. So subsequently, our IRA dollars have far outstripped our Roth dollars. However, I understand that I think it's next year you can make a income even for high income. I'm sorry, a conversion even for high income earners over to a Roth, and then pay the taxes on the traditional IRA and the rollover IRAs over the next couple of years. I guess for what reason would I not want to do that? Is that a no-brainer?
You might not want to do it if your tax bracket today is going to be substantially higher than after you retire. You know, the Roth is a very good thing.
I'm 35, so that's a tough bet to make.
Yeah. The difference between a Roth and a regular IRA is that when you contribute to a regular IRA, you only own that portion that you split ownership in that contribution and all future appreciation with Uncle Sam. When you contribute to a Roth IRA, you've already paid the taxes on it, so you own 100% of the assets in it. And if you if your tax bracket doesn't change, you really should be indifferent as to which one you contribute to. Because on an after-tax basis, they're going to come out the same.
Hmm.
Okay, so unless I'm pretty confident that my tax bracket's going to be lower, then it's not worth it.
If your tax bracket's going to be lower in the future, you will have done yourself in by making a conversion.
Okay.
If it's going to be higher in the future, you will have done yourself a great favor.
Okay. Now, what's the current status of my being able to continue to contribute to a traditional IRA? And I say me in particular because I don't work anymore; just my wife does now.
Well, she can have a spousal depending on your income limits, and there's a really pretty decent publication called the IRS Pub 590 that covers what the contribution limits are for spousal IRAs, et cetera. And the limits for the Roth and the amount you can deduct versus non-deduction and all that. It's very straightforward, but with a husband-wife's IRA work situation and high income limits, that changes every year what the limits are. Better to refer to the IRS Pub directly.
Okay.
And you can Google it. It'll pop right up, IRS Pub 590.
Okay,
right.
I'll check it out. Thank you.
Everything you ever wanted to know about IRAs and Roth IRAs.
We've got Denise in Sparta with an email question for you and Frank, and that's, I'm wondering how to find a good financial counselor. My debt is great, and I really need some direction and help getting things in order.
Well, you know, I would go, that's the kind of thing that probably is best addressed by a fee-only advisor who will work on an hourly basis, somebody from NAPFA. I'd go to NAPFA.org, National Association of Professional Financial Advisors, I believe. And those people are all certified financial planners. They're working on a fee basis, and they can help you with areas like budgeting and saving
in a plan that will get you out of debt and back on your financial feet.
So it's NAPFA, N-A-P-F-A?
Yeah, right, .org.
.org, okay. Susan in Kenosha, your turn. Hi, Susan.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure,
I really enjoy your show. I watch it every Monday or listen to it every Monday while I'm delivering my Meals on Wheels. My question is, as of last year, I had to start taking out my investments and taking out a percentage. And I read that this year we do not have to do that. And I'm wondering if it would be better to leave it in until my husband is no longer employed and come in at a lower tax bracket.
Well, you're correct. The president signed a bill late last year that allows people who are taking what are called required minimum distributions at age 70 and a half a year of forgiveness. You can take it or not, depending on what you feel like doing. And,
okay.
And one reason you might want to take the money out is that you can move lots of assets out of your IRA at a very low tax cost by simply journaling your mutual funds, say, from your IRA to a private account. You don't even have to sell them, just journal them out. And then when they appreciate, you'll only have to pay capital gains on the gain as opposed to ordinary income on it later. On the other hand, if it is down and you don't care to take it out and you don't need to take it out, then by leaving it there, you'll get the value of deferrals. And if your income tax level is lower, as you suggested later, that may be a very good thing to do. Because
yeah.
If your husband retires and your bracket goes down, you'll be happy you had the deferral.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Sure.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. And Patricia in Madison, your turn. Hi, Patricia.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. For the woman who called in inquiring about investing in United States savings bonds as a conservative investment, the I-bonds are currently paying 5.64%, and one has to remember that that's state tax-free. So I still think they're a wise investment for individuals on the conservative side.
The I-bonds are linked to inflation. They pay a rather low guaranteed amount, and then the balance is inflation indexed. They are a good investment, especially if we have inflation on the conservative side. I wouldn't want to say they're not a good investment, but I don't think it's the kind of thing that will give you the kind of growth long term that the stock market will. So your every investor has to decide how much to put in safe assets and how much to put in the riskier assets for the higher growth. But for someone who said they wanted to use I-bonds for their safe investment pool, I can only say that it's not a bad choice. And again, we'll meet in 30 years and see if it was the best possible choice. But it's a very good choice. It's not a bad choice, and I wouldn't want to imply that it was.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for calling, Patricia. Jim in Dubuque, Iowa. Your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hi. I've been investing in gold for several years now. Last year it was only up 6%, but that beat all the other indexes by 30 or 40%. It's up an average of over 16% over the last 8 years, every year, over 16% average. I'm wondering why more financial advisors don't recommend it. Statistically, it's been shown that having 5 or 10% gold in your portfolio is the best counterbalancing asset.
What do you think, Frank?
Well, you know, gold has got an attraction far beyond its value as an asset. And, you know, in my first book, I told a story that, you know, in 3,000 years ago, an ounce of gold would buy you a really fine power toga. And you would be the envy of all your fellow senators who surveyed you. But flash forward to today, that ounce of gold is still only going to buy you a medium good suit at one of the better known department stores. So in 3,000 years, there's been actually no growth in value. The nominal growth has been, okay.
But in fact, you can't buy any more donuts or any more suits than you could have 3,000 years ago. And so we tend to think that over time it's not going to grow. Depending on how you buy it, you may have to pay storage costs, you may have to pay insurance, you may have to pay management fees. And yes, it has a low correlation, and it, during certain particular periods of time, it looks okay. But other assets, you know, treasury bonds, treasury bills would have had a higher return than gold over the longer haul.
Hmm. Thanks for calling. And Frank, thank you so much. It's always a great pleasure to have you with us, and sure look forward to your next visit. Thank you again.
Well, I always enjoy, and I enjoy the questions, and I appreciate the chance to talk to your listeners.
Thanks, Frank. Frank Armstrong, a co-author with Jason Doss of The Retirement Challenge, Will You Sink or Swim? And take a look at their the book's coming out February 15th or about. But you can go to the website. It's sink-swim.com, sink-swim.com, and you'll find it there. Coming up at noon today, the official Wisconsin celebration from the state capitol of the life of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. with host Jonathan Overby. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.